aired and presented by The Church of God International, sponsor of the Armor of God radio broadcast and telecast.
When it was all said and done, the children of Israel had to be quite amazed as they stood on the threshold of a long journey. I don't think they had any idea what was ahead for them, and we do because we get to read about it historically out of the pages of the Scripture. But can you imagine what it was like to be them for just that week, or maybe that month, or when you consider how long the plagues probably took place? When you really go back and study it carefully, the plagues probably lasted no fewer than 6 to 8 to 9 months when you actually start counting it all up. And I'll give you a clue to that, because remember, the very first thing that Pharaoh did is he said that they would not be given the stubble from the hay. They'd have to go out and find just the very little bit that had already been cut down. Well, that had to be there, didn't it? Okay, what season of the year was that? Well, that was probably then, you know, 6-7 months prior to their exodus out of the land of Egypt. And if you study it real carefully as you go through there, there are little clues that jump off the page occasionally to show you, well, this plague lasted this long, this plague lasted this long, and probably, when it's all put together, it was several months' worth. You know, we tend to think it just happened quickly in a week. No, it didn't happen in a week. So they had a lot of time to think about it all. All that had occurred, and I don't know, it would have been absolutely overwhelming. And you look back at the miracles that occurred. And for those in our fellowship today who are new, and I know we do have some new converts to our fellowship, you might need to go back and take a look. It's an interesting study to find out what God did to make a difference between His people and those that were not His people. And He did do something rather dramatic. The reason why I want to focus on this a little bit today is because we yearn for the same thing, especially in light of what we anticipate occurring sometime in the future. The title of this message is, You Are or Being Distinctly Marked. There's that word, marked. That one scares us just a little bit, doesn't it? What kind of a mark do you have? I don't want a mark. You don't want to have the mark of the name and the number and the image of the beast, do you? That's what you associate it with. You also associate it with another mark. You know, people search in vain from the beginning of Scripture to the end of Scripture to try to understand what the mark of Cain was. Mark, mark, and then there's the book of Mark, I guess. Oh, we get obsessed with this mark just a little bit. I like to think for a moment about the children of Israel and try to draw a parallel to us today, because I'd like to suggest to you, and I believe this, that we are distinctly marked. Yes, you are. You either are or you aren't, but I'd like to believe that you are. And I'd like to talk about why that's important. Now, be the children of Israel for just a moment, if we can. I know we can't comprehend that. We really can't. You know, we talk about the bad times. We talk about how bad things are. And I'm going to tell you something I believe. That's a product of our church culture, and I think it's time to stop. Everything's so bad. Now, let me tell you why I think that, because I hear us talk. I hear our conversations. And I hear us, I'll lead into a conversation with you, and I'll talk about something like, boy, those events over in Uganda are terrible. They are. And you'll say, boy, things are really bad. I'll talk about the fact that there's flooding up in the Northwest or in off of California, and you will say, boy, things are really bad. I'll talk about the drought that comes and goes. Droughts have been with us. I read the Bible, brethren. Droughts have been with us for how long? How long have there been droughts? About as long as this book's been written. Now, there's some bad ones coming because I do believe in prophecy. I want that clear. We do believe in prophecy. But I'm sort of tired of hearing, boy, things are bad. Things are so bad. Now, I want to challenge you to do something. I know this is going to be hard for you. I know it is, but I'm going to challenge you. I want you to just step out of that restriction and just in your mind, or if you will, just sort of utter it and say this. Things are pretty good. Can we do that? Boy, I don't know. That doesn't fly. I don't want to say things are pretty good. No, wait a minute.
Have any of you read Fox's Book of Martyrs lately? Have any of you pulled that one out? I was going to read to you that from that book today. I don't have the stomach for it. Fox's Book of Martyrs, it talks about the Christians, the men and women who lost their lives because of their belief in Jesus Christ. And I can tell you about some of the things that happened. Women were put up on stakes and impaled with their children inside them, and their children came out. I can tell you about the Christians who were put on wheels and put into a burning fire of oil and barbecued.
Any of you had that happen to you lately?
I can tell you about the people that were hung, cut up, buried alive, fed to the animals.
I suggest to you, things are pretty bad. That'd be pretty rough, wouldn't it? But you know, I look at us today, and you all are marvelously attired.
I see Carla here. I think of her, you know, she has a newborn child on the way. That's pretty good, isn't it? Isn't that pretty good? You have that pregnant glow.
That's pretty good. All of you are so nicely attired. I think that's pretty good. I noticed the parking lot was filled with vehicles that we can sit in comfortably and drive all the way from Shreveport to here, or wherever we come from, and we know we're just in air conditioning, and it's pretty good, isn't it? Boy, I looked at my cupboards this morning. Betsy keeps them stocked pretty well. Pretty good, isn't it? I have basically good health. It's not as good as I want it to be, but been pretty good. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, what's all this bad stuff? Can somebody explain to me what all the bad... Now, I know that Satan is a god of this world. I've got that. But how come that's supposed to be a part of my fear and anxiety? You mean I'm supposed to kowtow to the devil of this world? Is that where I put my fear? Or do I have a fear of God? I just want to sort of challenge you today. I want to challenge you to think about the things that are good versus the things that are bad. And I want us to try to restructure our vocabulary just a little bit. Because I want to ask you something. Why does anyone want to come to a church that's fearful of all the bad things in this world? Come on, come into our church so you can be persecuted. Come into our church where you can be without food. Come into our church where you'll be eaten up with diseases. Come into our church where you'll have to run for fear the rocks will fall on you. Come on, we can't wait to have you. Boy, that builds a church in a hurry, doesn't it? Just think about that. Come to us because we got all sorts of bad news in our church. That's what our fellowship is all about. You want to be distinctly marked? Join us. You know, I've been listening to it for a good number of years. And I thought back about it for a number of reasons. And in all this umbrella of bad news, I've had two beautiful daughters. I'm going to become a grandfather. And their lives are good. Oh, there's that word again, good. And they seem to be challenged by life. They have reverence for God. Pretty good. Well, that's okay, isn't it? That's good news. And I want us to celebrate, if we can, a little bit of the good news, because our culture over the years has produced this umbrella and anxiety of everything's bad. You know, conspiracy theories. And you know, there may or may not be. That's not my issue. Conspiracy theories don't motivate me, except the one that's revealed in the Word of God. That's the one that's important. The prophetical utterances that are absolutely irrefutably true in Scripture, those are the ones that are really important to me, because I'm getting tired of trying to sit around and figure out, boy, I wonder if this guy's got it figured out right this time. All this bad news. No, I want you to think about it for a moment. I'm really calling you to think about it. I look at you all, and you all look okay. None of you are going to walk out that auditorium today and be put into jail, I don't think. I hope not. You know, we think about our ministers today. Our ministers, we have a great group of ministers in our church, but to my knowledge, none of our ministers have ever been subjected to the likes of what happened to the Apostle Paul. And what about Polycarp? And what about John? What about John the Baptist? Who was? What happened to him? That's bad news. What happened to John the Baptist? That's bad news. And yet, what occurred to him was only a confirmation of what biblically was true. I don't know, you know, we see John the Baptist one of these days, he'll probably say, well, I wish we didn't have to do that, but you know what, if it turned to the glory of God, it's probably okay. Now, I want us to think about the way we think. And I'd like for you all to quit talking about how things are so bad. Let me just say it for you, things are bad. Okay, I know that there's a system out there where things are bad. I know that there is a decline in morality. And yet, on the other hand, I see that there's a resurgence of people going to church. Okay, well, we were saying, okay, well, those are all the false churches. Okay, well, I'm not going to say that learning untruth is bad, but I'd sure much rather they pick up those kinds of practices rather than pick up guns and wear camouflage and go rampantly through the streets, wouldn't you? No, I know the world is bad. The reason why I know it, I have all sorts of things here today. I went through 7 magazines. I don't know if I have time to cover it all with you. I just picked up 7 magazines randomly. They weren't in order. And I thought, wonder why it is that we think the way that we do. And a lot of it's because of what we get force-fed through the media, through magazines, through television, through movies, through radio, through everything we pick up on. And I'll tell you what's going on in our society today. It is just a free-for-all for complain, and judge this and gripe about that. It's just a free-for-all. You know, if you're around people who gripe and complain all the time, guess what you start to do? It just wears off. No, I picked up the news, and I'll just show you very quickly, because what I did, and I realized I'm going to caution myself here, let you know I thought of this, that maybe what I picked out of these magazines was slanted toward my perspective, so I'm going to grant you that right off the bat. But basically, I was looking for good news versus bad news in these magazines that we get. And so here's what I picked up out of 7 different magazines. That's a long time. Here's what was on the news. You'll recognize most of these things. There was the crash of the Marine Osprey tilt rotor aircraft that killed 19 Marines. Y'all remember that? How about the terrible Tuesday when the stock market, if any of you have pension plans and stocks, there they crashed. All of us remember that. Oh, I guess it's sort of recovered since then. But anyway, how about the removal of Elian Gonzalez? I've had all of that I want. I am played out on that one. But you know what's interesting? I just want to illustrate a point. If we had a chance in this congregation to talk about it, we'd be split on it. And yet all of us have God's Holy Spirit. The reason why I know that is some of us have talked about it. And I have my perspective, and I've noticed that my perspective doesn't agree with some of your perspectives. And here we all are all part of it. I understand why there's problems and people don't get along. They just don't disagree. And yet here we profess to be a part of the same faith. I guess that's good, though, because we don't all have the answers then, do we? That includes the ministry. No, that's been on the news. Violence then in the streets. There are all these words. People being killed. Violence. Kidnappings. The disruption of Washington by peaceful demonstrators protesting the meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And for some, in our culture, the IMF is bad news. And it may be. But I'm not a member of it. Are any of you? Well, maybe we ought to keep things in focus a little bit. Because I can only be responsible for whom? I'd be responsible for me. And I'd be responsible for what I say. It went on, all these are the things that were in there. Finally, there was a good news article. And I doubt that any of you even heard about this. There's a teacher in Southern California, Los Angeles Unified School District, with 711,000 students there that have limited ability in English. And there was a teacher who, of all things, is teaching his students, I think it's a 5th grade class, Shakespeare. That was a good news article. And he makes a salary of $39,000 a year, and he spends most of that money on books and travel for his kids. That's good news, isn't it? Isn't that good news? Well, how come you didn't hear about that? Did any of you hear that on the news? No, didn't hear about that, did you? No, but I'll tell you what you did hear about. You did hear about gun control, didn't you? And we're still hearing about gun control. And this terrible, terrible incident, it is terrible, of this act of violence up in Washington where these 7 children, innocent little bystanding children, were just, you know, gunned down apparently between 2 gangs. I don't know how that's all going to play out. And we heard about that. And you're going to hear a whole lot more about that. We heard about the Army's top intelligence officer filing a sexual harassment complaint against a federal general or fellow general. We heard about that. We heard that Pope John Paul II made a trip to Jerusalem. Boy, everybody was up in arms about that. They had more police out there because he was traveling there and they were afraid that he was going to be assassinated or shot at. Really? That caught the news. We also heard about Russia getting a new president, Vladimir Putin. We're all worried about how that's going to impact our country. We also heard about a Christian cult where over 300 and so bodies were burned up as a result of believing in what that movement for the restoration of the Ten Commandments of God Church taught. We all heard about that. Well, there was one other piece of good news in my seven magazines. It was that Jerry Falwell had had an unprecedented meeting with over 200 gays. Good news. That was it. Now, I could go on and on and on. I have all sorts of things here. And I've got to thinking, but boy, that's what we focus on. Where are all the stories of sacrifice? Oh, there was one. I called on the news. I thought this was really good. A teacher donated a kidney to one of her students. I hope all of you saw that. That was good news, wasn't it? You know, boy, bad news, bad news, bad news. Bad news, bad news, bad news. I remember, for example, how often I have been taught about, I'm going back to this drought thing, and I'm very careful about this because knowing my luck, this is what's going to happen, is that there'll be a major serious drought this summer. But if that occurs, let me just say that, that's been going on for a long, long time. I think we'll all know when it becomes a fulfillment of prophecy, the types of prophecies that are contained in the book of Revelation. Now, for those of us who get up here from this pulpit, or whatever pulpit it might be, and we talk about, well, just how bad things are going to be, and the water levels are going down, why don't we get back up 2 months later and tell about the water levels that have gone up? Anybody want to explain that to me? See, that's the way this pulpit can be used. I can get up here and tell you, and it has been done time and time and time again. There's drought in the Midwest, and we have no crops. And a year later, the bins are overflowing in the streets. Okay, where's the follow-up report to that? Why is it that what tends to motivate us in our Christianity is bad news? Okay, that's good. That confirms my Christianity. Bad news. Oh, boy, I'm in here. This is it. This is God's church. Bad news. Boom, okay, we're going to go over there. There's a bomb that goes off. Boy, this is God's church, all right. We're hearing all the bad news. Have you ever wondered about that? I'm just about bad news down. Because I think when we just are possessed with that, we are dehumanized. And we forget about Becky and her challenges in life and what she's doing to make this world better. And we forget about our Shreveport people over there and them getting together every single week when maybe just a handful or two handfuls of people have the courage and the strength to come out of a society and a world and fellowship together. And yes, people are baptized, and I know they get pretty doggone excited about it. All this good news. How can we not talk about that very much? I would like you to turn with me to the book of Exodus for a moment and take a look at something. And I know that I beg your forgiveness, anybody who I'm going to offend today, because I don't mean to offend anybody. I just want to call our attention to something which seems to be a trait of human nature. I read something the other day which is so true, but reading it brought it out to me. How many of you have ever gone into a parking lot up at Albertsons or Brookshire's, and you're driving around and you want a parking spot? Okay? We all do that. And all of a sudden you see somebody coming out and they've got their keys in their hands and they're walking over to their automobile and they're getting in their vehicle, and so you stop and you stop behind them and you wait for them to back out because you're going to take their spot. Any of you ever done that? Sure, we've all done that. You know what's interesting? And there are people who have done this. There are people who are students of human nature trying to decide about anger and manipulation who have actually timed our responses to those types of things. And here's what's fascinating to me. And this old human nature we've got is something else. But when I say this to you, you're going to say, well, that's me. Maybe you should. No, they found out if there's no car waiting, you come out, you get your keys out, you get in your car, and it takes X amount of seconds. But if someone comes, you get in your car, you open your car keys, and you sit in there, and all of a sudden somebody comes behind you, and they're waiting for your spot, you know what you do? You make them wait. There's just some little quirk of human nature that makes... they want my spot, I guess. And I've had that happen to me many times, coming into a spot. I'm sitting back there and I'm thinking, what in the world are those people doing in that car?
You know, they've been sitting there for 20 seconds, and I watch for this. I watch the brake light to come on. Because, you know, if you push the brake lights come on. So I know you got your foot on the brake. Just put that key in the ignition and get moving. Now, there's something about human nature. There's a quirk about us that if we know somebody wants our spot, we make them wait. We're a piece of work, all right. And we've not changed much in all these centuries. Exodus chapter 15, I wanted to turn here. I want you to notice something. There are several chronological ways to look at the Exodus, and there is one that I think that has some value and some merit, and I would like to present that to you at this point. And basically it deals with the close of the Exodus. And you will find that what happens in chapter 15 is exactly what we're doing here today. This is the last great day, the last day of unleavened bread, when the children of Israel had come out of Egypt. 7 days. And you know what they're doing here? They're having church services, just like we are today. I want you to notice what they do. Here's what they do. They have songs. Well, we had songs today, and I was sitting there, and I thought, boy, these people are really singing today. Eric's got them moving, and that's the way it ought to be, and everybody's getting into it. I suspect that the songs that they sang on this occasion were really something. Don't you think so? After all those centuries of captivity and all these incredible miracles that had taken place. Notice just a few verses with me, beginning in verse 15. Because I'm going to make a point about what I see here, which is in contrast to what I see for us. And I think we can change it. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song to the Lord, and spoke, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider has he thrown into the sea, and the Lord is my strength, my song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him a habitation. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war, meaning God has fought our battles for us. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host has he cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank into the bottom as a stone. You see, they were scared to death, like you and I would have been, to know that the children of Israel were going to be pursued by this Egyptian army in chariots and spears and lances. And they suspected that the worst would happen. And then God intervened for them. And it's well worded if you just want to turn over the page here. Verse 13 of chapter 14. Moses said to the people, fear you not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he shall show unto you this day. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. Yeah, they saw them again. You know where they saw them? Washed up on the shores, dead. God did exactly what Moses said he was going to do. He goes on to say in verse 6, thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, has dashed in pieces the enemy, and that means it can overcome the devil himself. You know, we run in fear and trepidation of the devil. Well, you know, just let God stand up against the devil. You quit worrying about him so much. You know, we get obsessed with things. We get obsessed with the devil. Why don't you get obsessed with Jesus Christ? Get obsessed with God. Why do we get obsessed with all this negative garbage? Well, it's because of our culture. I'm calling it like it is. And maybe I'm venting just a little bit here today. But you see, we've come through, if you will, the Red Sea. We need to come out on the other side a little bit different, transformed. Maybe we can do that. Then he goes on and says, and in the greatness of thy excellency, you have overthrown them that rose up against you. You sent forth your wrath, which consumed them as stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The floods stood upright as a heap, and the depths were congealed in the heart of the enemy, or the heart of the sea, excuse me. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, and my lust shall be satisfied upon them. I will draw my sword, and my hand shall destroy them. You did blow with your wind, and the sea covered them. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. So who is like unto you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness and fearful in praises, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, and the earth swallowed them. You in your mercy have led forth the people which you have redeemed. You have guided them in the strength unto the holy habitation. When I read through this, you know what strikes me? Something strikes me here that is in contrast to my culture. Let me tell you what that is.
they are completely involved in giving praise to God for what He did. They're not sitting in apprehension about what He's going to do. You understand the difference? We tend to sit around as a church and we're worried about the future. Well, why are you worried about the future? If you're distinctly marked, you're marked. Now, I had something interesting happen to me the other day. I don't know quite what to make of this. I've actually had it happen to me twice recently. This is just a couple of days ago. I was standing... Where was I? I've forgotten now. It must have been to some store, and I was commenting about something or making some inquiries, and a young lady was there, and she said, "Do you mind if I ask you what you do?" "Oh, I can't tell. I can't tell." And I said, "Well, I'm a minister." She said, "I thought so." I thought, "How'd she know? How'd she thought so? How'd she know so?" Because I didn't have any, I didn't have the collar on or anything like that. And she said, "I thought so." I thought, "Well, that's okay. That's sort of like, you know what? I'm marked. In a way, I'm marked, am I not? I've had it happen to me twice in the last couple of weeks. I don't know. I need to go change clothes or do something. Everybody's got me pegged for a minister. I'm marked." Well, so are you. Aren't you? But I will tell you this. What she heard coming out of me was not a message of despair. What she heard coming out of me was not an anxiety about prophetical fulfillment. It was hope. It was belief. It was joy, I hope. And she seemed to say, "Well, you're a minister." Well, I sort of like that. I thought I'd share that with you. But so what? You're marked as well. Your husbands and wives, your children. You're distinctly marked, aren't you? Now, I might talk just a moment about this. You know, you go back, people just are obsessed on these marks. I mentioned to you earlier the mark of Cain. Cain's mark. And you might do a study on this sometime. It's pretty interesting if you go to it. The word is O-W-T-H. People want to make you think that it's something you wore around your neck, or maybe it was a cross that you put around here. People want to make you think it was a spot that was on somebody's forehead. Some people even think he had a horn that grew out of his head. Some people think it was he had a dog. Boy, if that's it, we've all got Cain's mark, don't we? If that's what it was. People have just tried to figure it out from the beginning to the end, and you know what? Nobody knows. So why be obsessed about it? You know, when you read the context, what it seems to indicate is that the mark, and it wasn't placed on him, it was given to him and for him. Have you ever noticed that? The mark that was given to Cain, study this, was given to him and for him. Why? So that he wouldn't be killed. And then immediately after reading those verses, you know what it talks about? It talks about the fact that he was sent to the east and he built a city of refuge, which marked him as a man who should not be touched. The city. So we need to get away with all this obsession about a blot and this and skin color and blah, 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 blah. I'm marked out. You know, does it really make any difference? Then we get over to the mark of the beast. Now that one does concern me. Because I think we should take a look at that for just a moment. In Revelation, I believe it's chapter 13, isn't it?
That concludes the recording of side A. Please flip over now to side B to continue listening.
Revelation chapter 13. We hear a lot about this, and it is going to take place. But I want to show you all something. You see my Bible here? It's falling apart. You see all those notes in there? See them? I put those in there myself. Most of them are dead wrong. Most of them are dead wrong. You want me to read them to you? Most of them are dead wrong. My notes in the Holy Word of God, false. I wonder where did I get all these ideas? That was all part of this cult, church culture that seemed to just thrive on, boy, how are things? Boy, it's bad. Well, it's bad. Oh, I agree with you, and I'm not taking away, and I'm not making light of it. I really don't mean to do that, because these are serious times. These are prophetical utterances that are going to take place. There is going to be this mark of the beast, this image of the beast, this number of the beast. It's talked about specifically in verse 16 of this chapter. I'm turning here for a specific reason, because I can't tell you what it is. People have tried and tried and tried and tried. But it may not be any more complicated than this. That young gal, I guess she was younger than me, looked at me and she says, "Well, I sort of figured you were a minister. I didn't have a mark on me. They just knew. They just know." You don't think the children of Israel knew that the children of Egypt were different than them, and the Egyptians knew the children of Israel were different from them? Oh, there was a division made in the land. We could go back. We don't have time to look at that today. We don't have time to go back and look at the fact that the first three miracles, I've often been amazed by this, that the magicians of Pharaoh could match the miracles of Moses and God. Remember when he put the snake down, the chains, the rod? And I have never seen anything like that, have you? I have never seen, even David Copperfield, I don't think, can do this. I don't think he can take a rod and change it into a snake. I don't think. But Pharaoh's magicians could. And they could even turn the water into blood. I've never seen that either. That would really arrest my attention. And so it was sort of like this contest between the devil and God, Pharaoh and God, and then all of a sudden God just said, "Well, I've had enough of this, let's make a difference." And boy, did he make a difference with a swarm of flies that were just everywhere. And the Bible says specifically there was a difference then between the peoples, which makes you wonder if the children of Israel were not subjected to the first three. Now that's bad news when you go back and study it. That's right, that the water the Egyptians had was bloody too. And the dust, that the dust was upon them as well. You know, it may very well be true as we look about the unfolding of prophetical events in the future that we're going to have to undergo some of those very things that are going on in this country. But we'll still be marked. There will still be a distinct mark about you and about your children. Your children, even the language by the Apostle Paul, your children are holy. They're sanctified. They're set apart. Do you think that the children of Israel were marked when the blood was put on the doorposts of their homes? What do you think? And it was visible, wasn't it? And everybody who was inside was protected. Everybody who was outside was not protected. I think sometimes we just make a little bit too much out of all this, trying to understand it. And what we ought to be doing, instead of trying to figure out, well, whose name adds up to 666? And it was interesting, I was looking through commentaries, and this is what the commentary said, and I like the way it was placed. I like the way it was put. He says, "What we do, theologians try to play a game with numbers. A game." And they even gave a name to it. It was something like geranium, G-E-R-A-N-I-U-M. I guess it's where you have to add up numbers. And it's the most, you know, we are told here to count, so I'm not taking away from that. But we get all caught up in, and I wonder if gross adds up to 666. What if it did? What do you expect me to do, go kill myself? You know, we've gone through all this thing. We've gone through Vicar of Christ. We've gone through what Cain's name means. We've gone through all these things. We've got them all added up. We do. We have added it up. When I look at this, although we are called to count, I think that God is the one who's going to make all this come about, don't you? So in the meantime, I want to be distinctly marked because I don't want to have that mark. And the only way I'm not going to have that mark is because I belong to someone else and everyone knows it. You don't have to have a big old dot on your forehead. Or like I listened to a tape the other day of someone who said, it's going to happen, the year 2000, beginning of the new millennium, we're going to get chips. Everybody is going to be a government takeover. We're all going to have chips put in our hands.
If it's not a chocolate chip, I'm not having one put on mine. You know. And so I listened to the tape, and you know what? There was, as far as I know, there was not one chip put in any of you on January 1, was there? Boy, this guy was as serious as a heart attack, and no pun intended on heart attack. You know, when I read these verses, yes, that's going to happen, and I believe it, but you know what I really hang on to? It's just turn. How come we don't preach? See, that's the bad news. Why don't we preach just one page over? Chapter 15, verse 2. Revelation 15 and verse 2. And as I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory. Oh, you mean there are some who are not going to succumb? You mean there are some who are not going to be overcome by the beast? You mean there are some who are going to be distinctly marked? You mean there are some who are not going to be involved in that false religious, governmental, pagan system? Yes. And them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark and over the number of his name, they stand on the sea of glass as having harps of God. Hey, folks, that's good news. You don't think that's good news? So I think we make a little bit too much out of these anxieties, and I'm going to tell you why. It's because when we get focused upon all this bad news, bad news works its way into our life. You know, come in fellowship with us. Boy, we offer you a lot. Persecution. People will revile you. They'll hate you. You know, years ago, this used to really amaze me. I don't think Vance will. We've talked about this. Vance won't mind me mentioning this. You know, the beast and the false prophet. Hey, those are real characters. I was amazed because I remember one time that several different people have been identified as the false prophet, as the beast. And one of them was, remember this name? Franz Joseph Strauss. Remember him? He was identified as the beast. And I remember when I heard that, I thought, that's bad news. And then you know what really amazed me? The man who identified him as the beast gave him a gun! Somebody help me up, would you? If this man is the beast who's going to desecrate all of Christianity and I'm going to give you the mark, the number, and the image of the beast, here's the gun! You all remember that? I'm sitting there thinking, well, why don't we just give him an atomic weapon? If that's the beast. But you know what? He wasn't the beast. Was he? He's dead. Then there was Mr. Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev. He was the beast because he had the mark. You remember him? Poor Mr. Gorbachev. I mean, he had a mark on his forehead, a birthmark on his forehead. Boy, as soon as the people were taking pictures of him, there were people of our Christian culture, and I said, that's him. He's the one. He's the beast because he's got the mark. And now Mr. Gorbachev is one of the foremost proponents of democracy. Yeah. Maybe we ought to just quit worrying about all that and know what's going to happen, and it'll happen in due time. And in the meantime, you and I have a responsibility to not be marked by that. It's really pretty simple. Let me tell you some things I want you to think about. And as we're doing that, there's so many places I want to turn to, but I'm just going to have to boil it down here to the Gospel of John. And during the Passover service this year, perhaps more so than any other time, these verses really hit me hard and made me think. And it's probably the good reason why we need to read these things every single year, because something comes out. John chapter 15, beginning in verse 14, Jesus said to his disciples, he says, "You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you."
What has been a traditional concern of mine is that people who are obsessed about bad news become bad people. People who are all caught up on understanding every little fulfillment of prophecy seem to miss a greater and more prominent work. You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Whatsoever things I command you. You know the teachings of Jesus. They're taught the pulpits every single weekend. It says here, henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knows not what his Lord knows, but I have called you friends. And that's staggering to realize that we are called the friends of Jesus. Jesus looks at us as a friend. For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go, that means to be appointed, and you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, that you love one another. Then he goes on to talk about the things that we know. You know, we are hated for our beliefs, but you know what? I can take a lot of hate if when I come here, I find a lot of love. What's so difficult and troublesome is to take a lot of hate and come here and find hate. That's discouraging. That's bad news. Yeah, all these things that Jesus said are true. I don't question them, not at all. I'd like to just compliment our congregation here in Tyler, because I don't know what's happened. There's been a transformation of some degree. And although our numbers are not what we would want them to be, you know what? There's a greater spirit of love and communion together than I've seen in a long, long time. People who genuinely care about one another and send each other cards and give each other calls. And I don't know exactly what's brought that about, except the glory has to be given to whom? God the Father. Transformation is taking place in His people. If you will turn now to John chapter 13, and this is the verse that really stands out to me in this section of Scripture. John chapter 13, I'm going to begin reading in verse 31. Therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I'm with you, you shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, where I go you cannot come. So now I say to you, verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. Verse 35, if you don't have this marked, mark it. You know what distinctly marks you? You know what makes you different from everyone else? You want to know what makes you different from the image and the number of the beast and the mark of the beast? This verse. This one. Verse 35, by this. You want to know what's important? By this shall all men know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Pretty simple, isn't it? I don't think that's too complicated. Boy, it's tough to love each other, though. It really is. It's difficult sometimes to love each other. But it seems to me that that's what marks you distinctly, that you really do care for one another. And that there's a lot carried into that, and we preach about that, and we will continue to preach it. But you know, I think that's more important than we realize, because that was the very substance of what Jesus preached here to his disciples prior to his murder, prior to his execution. Now let me give you a couple of possibilities as we close out. Let me tell you some of the things that are different about distinctly marked people. And just listen to what I'm saying to you and see if this is you. Because we don't want to be that person who, if somebody wants our parking spot, we make them wait. Do we? No, not really. And that's just a trite illustration. But how about this? You are known by the way you act outside these doors. You are known by the way you treat people at the grocery store, on the highways, by those people who render service to you, like those who pick up your trash, if you will, in your neighborhood,
Whereas I've seen on a commercial that was on TV, and it sort of makes me mad about it, but I understand the reason for it. It's a quit smoking advertisement. Did you see that? And this guy's there, and he's at a restaurant, and this woman who's just doing her job, he's tapping on his... He's sort of impatient because he wanted something. I've forgotten what it was now, but he was just... Eggs, was it eggs? He was dissatisfied with the way the eggs were presented, and he said, well, take them back. I want whatever it is, scrambled over easy, whatever. It came out that she was going to quit. She was trying to quit smoking, too, but the reason why she wasn't so nasty is because she was wearing this patch. Like what she said. She said, if I weren't wearing this patch, these eggs would be in your face. And I'm not supporting that either. I hope you understand. No, it's reflected in the way you are outside these doors. It's reflected in the way that you treat your family. It's reflected in the way that you keep hoping and working for change in people and institutions when others say that nothing can be done. You keep working at it. You keep working at it. It is reflected in the way that you are saddened or outraged by events that cause others to rejoice. And it causes you to rejoice when others are bitterly disappointed. It's a different way of looking at things. It is reflected in the way that you will always remain calm when others are in panic, and you are deeply disturbed when others are complacent. You will not be warmed up by sin. You will flee sin. You will flee the devil. You won't give in to it. You will overcome temptation. You will not, first of all, let yourself be put in the middle of it. Or if you do happen to be in the middle of it, you will bring yourself out of it. It is that quality, then, that being distinctly marked, that makes you different from those who want credit for the cause of justice. No, you're not interested in the credit. You just want things to get better. And then the last thing I'd like for you to think about is reflected in those people who experience the same goodness and God-forsakenness that others experience, and yet nevertheless, despite all the evidence to the contrary, they keep on living by their faith. They don't just throw it up and give up and quit. Every time I read this, and I like this, every time you see a man or woman put the bottle down, something's going on. I'm talking about alcoholism. You know how hard it is for some people to do that? Put it down and that's it. That's good, isn't it? Every time you see a young man or a woman go back to school when they don't have to, something is going on. That's good, isn't it? Every time you see a man give his son a hug, something is going on. At least I like to think so. That's good, isn't it? I can't help but believe that God called all of us out of sin and out of iniquity to enjoy life. We are called to delight in life and to celebrate it. We're to be fascinated by God. We're to be joyful to be in His presence, be awed by His mystery. We're to be sensitive to the patterns of beauty that He gives to us, and through the Spirit that He gives to all of us, be fascinated by what it can do in our lives. There is no question that there are evils in this old world which must be fought, and there are problems which must be worked on in my life, in this world. They must not be ignored. But if our attention is constantly upon them and them only, we become eroded. We become insensitive. We become rigid. We become drained of warmth. We become dehumanized. I'm going to close with a story. I like to do that. I want you to think about it. Because one of our goals is very simply this. We want this auditorium one day to have this new person and this new person. Although, you know, there is a principle, don't count the sheep. Just be worried about what they're being fed. But it's okay if people fill up, isn't it? We go along for that. So how do we get it done? Those of you who have come through, we didn't go through Corinthians, and we're being baptized to the Red Sea. We don't have time for that here today, but we have been. It tells us not to lust. It tells us not to commit fornication. It tells us not to subject ourselves to the things that they got into. in that example. All right, so how do we put all this together?
Well, it really boils down to you, because I'm telling you, you're distinctly marked. You don't have the mark of the beast. I don't believe if you do, I hope you leave. We don't need the beast and his number and his name here. We don't need any of that evil. You know, there's an old saying, it's the least of two evils. You know what the problem is with that statement, the least of two evils? You still got evil. We don't need the least of two evils ever. We just need God's goodness. There's a story about a young man named Bill. And young Bill is a lot like some of us used to be. He's pretty much a wild-haired individual, free-spirited, wears torn clothing, rather impersonal hygiene. He's a college student. He might be among us next week, who knows. He's kind of a brilliant guy, but he's somewhat offbeat. And you know, of all things, he became interested in understanding Jesus Christ, of all things. He happens to live in an apartment across from a church. And it's a church that's been around a long time, and it's a church that's very conservative. And it's a church filled with people who dress much like we do, which is good. We're all dressed the way we ought to be, and I'm glad we dress that pleases God. All right, so I'm not talking about that, but I mean, it's the kind of church it was. One day, though, Bill decides it's time to go to church, because he had learned that they had a goal, that this congregation had a goal. They wanted to build their fellowship in church. And he says, well, I'll go over there. So sure enough, he gets up, doesn't make a whole lot of changes. He goes across the road, and there he is in church, and he's ready to come in. So he walks in. Church services are underway, just started. The minister is up behind the pulpit. Everybody's seated now. The minister is beginning to preach, and Bill walks in, and he looks around. No chairs in the back. And he sort of moseys up down the aisle there, and everybody begins to... What do people do? What would people do? What would we do? I'll tell you what we do. We go, if he's walking down the aisle, we're going... Isn't that what we do? That's just human nature. That's just we are a piece of work. Anyway, he meanders on up there, and he looks here, he kicks there, he can't find a place to sit down, so everybody's getting a little bit anxious about it all. So finally, he meanders his way all the way up to the very front of the church building, and the minister has seen all this transpire, and there's quite a tension that has developed in the church, because the man just sits down on the floor, right in front of the church, just sits down right there. And the minister who's talking, he says, he runs out of gas. And everybody's wondering, what's going to happen? They were so quiet in the church, you couldn't even hear people breathe. It's almost like they'd stop breathing. And then all of a sudden, out of the back, guess who comes to save the day? A deacon. An old deacon. A courtly deacon. He's an older man. He's wearing that three-piece suit. Boy, he looks good, too. He's been around a long time. A good man. He has a cane with him. Slowly but surely, because he's not too quick, he meanders his way down there, and everybody's wondering, well, Bill deserves it. We know what's going to happen to Bill. You know, it's just inevitable. So the man slowly but surely makes his way with his cane up through the center of the aisle of the church, up to the very front. Takes him a long time to reach the boy. By the time he gets there, the church is utterly silent except for the clicking of that cane. And then the deacon puts his cane down beside Bill, and with all the strength that he can muster up, he seats himself beside Bill on the floor so that Bill will not have to worship alone. That's good, isn't it? The truth of the matter is, as it was with the children of Israel, whose book we get to read every year and to remember and appreciate, the same is true of you. You, be careful of how you live, and live positively, and celebrate life, because I'm going to tell you why. I don't know how much time is ahead for all of us, and I don't have all the answers, but this I do know is absolutely clear. You are distinctly marked, and you may be the only Bible that Bill will ever read.
Thank you for listening to this cassette tape of The Church of God International. Feel free to contact us with any additional literature or tape request at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710, or call 903-825-2525, or email us at armorofgod@email.com. Thank you.